Welcome to Digital Garden State, a podcast by the New Jersey Health Information Management Systems Society.
Welcome to the New Jersey Health Information Management Systems Society podcast series, where we discuss emerging trends in healthcare technology and their impact on our industry. New Jersey HIMSS is a consortium of healthcare professionals, providers, and vendors who are committed to promoting constant improvement in the use of information technology within the healthcare industry. I am your host, Mike Fortino, current NJ HIMSS board member and account executive with Galaxy Solutions. Before we get started, as always, I just want to emphasize that our chapter is supported by some amazing companies, and without their sponsorship, we could not deliver on our mission of healthcare technology advocacy and learning. Today's podcast episode is a continuation of our customer story series where we highlight one of our great sponsors. And today's sponsor is Business Automation Experts, a strategic automation and information technology transformation consulting organization. And our guest today is Matt Lipkowski, founder of Business Automation Experts. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Mike. Nice to be
here. Good to have you here. Hey, Matt, I'm really looking forward to our talk today and learning about you, your company, and one of your innovative software development case studies with Cleveland Clinic. But before we get started, I want to mention two things. The first is that you've been a longtime sponsor of NJ HIMSS, 10 years, correct?
Sounds right. Yeah, I've definitely been a participant in HIMSS for a long time, and I'm glad that we've been able to sponsor them as well.
Yeah, no, that is much appreciated. And on behalf of our membership, I really want to thank you, because that is, again, very, very much appreciated. Second, I want to make sure that our members know your website. And that's www.businessautomationexperts.com, correct?
Yes.
Perfect, because just want to make sure. Sometimes we do these podcasts and I don't get that basic information out there until at the end of the podcast. I want to make sure that for all those that may bail out on the session, we at least make sure that we get that information out there. Also, you're located in Somerset, New Jersey, so you are a local sponsor for the New Jersey HIMSS chapter, correct?
Correct. Yeah. I believe in the good neighbor policy. Going to help the people that are around us.
That's great. So if you don't mind, let's start off with a brief overview of your background and then a little bit about Business Automation Experts, and then we can get into the case study.
Sure. So I started in the automotive industry, actually, in the 90s.
Really?
Correct. And I started writing software back in that time as well. And I was writing software for five different companies. I went to a school called Kettering University now. At the time, it was actually GMI, EMI, so it was General Motors Institute. And I certainly enjoy writing software and seeing how organizations benefit from utilizing technology. Mm-hmm. And one of my clients, it was a company called Total Repair Express, which is based in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The owner decided to help pay for my MBA. And so I moved out to New Jersey in 1999, which was right after Hurricane Floyd. So there was no housing. And, you know, it seems we still can't get out of the flood stage around here.
Timing's everything, yeah. Right? Well, that's really interesting, though. You know, the organization would be, you know, paying for the MBA, and I mean that's awesome. I mean,
yeah. So the software was important to run the whole company, handle all of the billing and collections, and the heart of it had to do with, say, inventory management of surgical equipment. So in the sterile supply areas in hospitals, we have trays that the doctors use when they do a procedure. And we have to keep track of those things and help the surgical techs put the right thing in the right box. And
would you say that was where you really started to focus in on automation of manual processes, you know, really taking a closer look at, you know, how do you optimize those, you know, whether there's somewhat automated and you know, a whole lot of manual effort behind those
workflows? Yeah. I mean, a lot of things I see today a lot of themes related to getting the right information to people in a way that mm-hmm. they can process it in an easy fashion. And there were some lessons that I learned in dealing with a broad audience of surgical techs that you need to obviously simplify things as much as possible. And you have to consider that not everybody's going to speak English. Not everybody kind of sees the world the same way. And when you're trying to make some improvements for people, you got to also have a sense of what are they starting from, and then where can they go, and what would the lift be so that they can kind of make that next step, right? So sometimes you're presenting something that will just rock their world, and you can't bring that to the fore because they need a few stepping stones in order to get there. And
sure.
So we kind of see it in the auto space right now, right, with the electric cars. People are starting to warm up to the idea and things. But maybe you didn't know the original horseless carriages, you know, the original automotive, they actually used to have a soundtrack where they would make the noise of horse hooves hitting the pavement in order to help people.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
That is something else.
But they, yeah, I mean,
you know, they're. That reminds me of a movie not too long ago where, you know, they were a couple of guys and I can't even, oh, Vince Vaughn was in it. And they came up with a device that would create the sound of a, you know, like a Hemi engine in an electric car, right? Whenever they hit the gas and it would modulate and stuff like that. So that is too funny.
Too funny. Timing and technology is really important, right? You know, there's plenty of really innovative ideas and things, but the packaging really matters, and the that understanding of where are people at in this day and age. Sometimes, like I said, really great idea, but you might be so far ahead that, you know, that tech adoption curve is really going to hit you. And
Would you say that, you know, that is probably, where would you put that in the number of challenges that you're faced with when you're looking to automate a manual process or you're looking to improve a process? Is that at the top of the list? Is that number one, two, three?
It's an important consideration. Yeah. So sometimes, if you're going to automate something, you know, the challenge is you don't want to make a broken process faster because you're just, you know, breaking stuff super fast. Yeah, I mean, you're just amplifying the problem. You aren't really moving the needle. So the next thing to consider is if you have to re-engineer a lot of things, that might be a step too far, right? So if you were trying to get something dramatically simplified, you have to consider, will there be any kind of loss to the process in general? So there's the technology out that's this remote robotic process automation, RPA. It's essentially like a front-end integration system, right? So a lot of things that I still deal with, and the way we typically handle things in healthcare is with HL7, right? We try and have standards so that one system can communicate with another system, and, you know,
then
ta-da, stuff in theory works. And the RPAs try to mimic, you know, what a human does with a computer: move mouse, click button, copy paste, et cetera.
Yep.
And we've been working more with some things related to how do you more quickly kind of get a sense of what somebody is doing, you know, like what's actually happening in the system. Because normally people would start by creating swim lanes and documenting the process and talking to the people that do things. And you talk to the, you know, a business owner, say, hey, how do you do this? And you get a view of the world, and it many times doesn't match the actual process. And so you want to get all right. that kind of figured out and then kind of step into, okay, what would be the next logical thing to do that we can actually help move the needle. Yeah, I've learned those things over the years and through some hard experiences, if you will, you know, but I've seen some of those benefits as well, where like one of the products that was developed when I was at Total Repair, we had to, so the core issue was those surgical trays. The company made money if we found something to fix, right? So if you kept seeing the same set over and over again, you would really lose money because you constantly open up the same kit. Oh, I fixed this yesterday. Nothing to do. You know, send it back. And we needed to help the clients kind of rotate the stock, rotate what they're dealing with, and built a system called Traymark, and then started putting that out there. And we would essentially give it away because it helped the client, the hospital, rotate the stock. And then the mobile technician that would show up, he could look and see, aha, here's something that hasn't been looked at in quite a while, thereby finding things that he could fix, which also was the point. We wanted to make sure that all of the instruments that were in use in surgery were sharp, working properly, et cetera, you know, because you don't want the doctor to have horrible tools. We ran into an interesting challenge at a hospital in the area, and the root issue was the techs came from Jamaica, actually, predominantly from that area of the world. And I didn't know this, but a high percentage of Jamaicans are colorblind. And the way they would identify their sets originally were these, you could buy these sheets of paper, and then they would have symbols on them, right? So it'd be like star, circle, star, circle, and then they would have different color patterns. And so they had like a sheet that corresponded to a given kind of set. And at that hospital, there were at least 4 to 5 episodes every month where they would have a patient open in surgery. And then they, so when they do a case, they usually have like a case cart, and they put everything that they need for that procedure in there. And then they don't open it because this is sterile supplies. So, you know, they wheel that in, and then, you know, they open the first thing, they start, and then they'll start to open the rest of them, right? So as they're kind of progressing through the process, they'll open one up, and this isn't the thing. You know, like, this isn't Dr. So-and-so's set. Where is it? So then they have to go back into the sterile supply area and pop open all kinds of stuff and then find what they actually needed to find. And so you had this challenge of patients being open for longer than necessary and increasing their risk of infection and things, simply because the surgical techs or the sterile techs weren't able to actually put the right stickers on the right thing. And so when this system came in to kind of help rotate the stock, it was a barcode that went on the inside. They scanned that. We gave them a sticker that went on the outside. And immediately, it never happened again. You know, like all of those complications went away. So it was interesting to see these kind of knock-on effects of, you know, I didn't try to solve that problem at the outset, but by helping to make that process easy for the technicians throughout the health system there, we also brought another benefit to the patients and things, because one, we were getting them supplies that are going to be sharp and working well, but two, we were getting them the right thing at the right time.
I'd say that it was a successful engagement.
And I mean, that was almost 20 years ago. I actually built that system about 2001.
Wow.
went out originally, mm-hmm. and this possible mm-hmm. implement is about 2023. And to this day, people still run that system. And then now there's more advanced things that are out there I've worked on. We even took it to the level of putting a kind of a unique barcode on each instrument itself so that we could kind of simplify things. Mm-hmm. But the company ended up being sold to Steris, and Steris has their own process, and the things that they're mm-hmm. trying to do is different. But then I've been in the healthcare space, you know, it's EMRs, mm-hmm. a lot of things.
You know, speaking of which, right, we wanted to talk about the Cleveland Clinic use case, correct. Right? A customer story. But, you know, at some point I'd like to come back and talk a little bit more about the surgical kit system that you did develop and put in place. Maybe not today, but, you know, perhaps in the future to talk about that a little bit more, because that's a very interesting, story from the perspective of, as you pointed out, right? You know, you're there trying to help solve it or overcome a challenge. And then the next thing you know, there's something else that you need to address. But we're able to, overcome it, and one that was critical to the whole process and to patient safety, right?
Yeah, I mean, so. You definitely want to consider ways to help marry what we do from a clinical mm-hmm. perspective to benefiting our end patients. And many times, as we know, the higher use are people that are going to be 60 and up, right? And so mm-hmm. now is,
gotcha.
I'm kind of getting closer to that age. I certainly appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm there.
Yeah. hey, yeah. This needs to be easier. Right. You know, and I'm also, yeah. my parents are baby boomers, and I'm in between. Right. So I have to be concerned with how to help them navigate some of the things within healthcare. And then I have kids, I got to deal with that side, and then I got to mm-hmm. deal with it myself. So
yep.
it's kind of interesting as you kind of age to see sort of how the health system works and maybe doesn't work.
You have a greater appreciation, right? A greater appreciation for the whole world of healthcare.
I do.
So let's talk a little bit about the Cleveland Clinic challenge, right? A little bit of the background, how that kind of started. Kind of go from there if you don't mind.
Certainly. So some of these themes you'll probably hear again as we go through that kind of story, mm-hmm. which originates with the head of cardiothoracic over there. His name's Dr. Gilanoff. And probably about mm-hmm. 10 years ago, he thought, well, what if patients could use the information on the internet so that we don't have to kind of explain some things, you know, like, hey, just go Google it mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so he did, mm-hmm. and he got some like 50 million responses, and then he started
going wow.
through, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, the information that's out here, you know, this is 10 years ago. This is horrible.
Right.
Like it's not evidence-based. It's got just blatant problems, you know, and now kind of what we're saying, like this AI revolution, we're going to make, you know, potentially mm-hmm. bad information mm-hmm. faster. And
mm-hmm.
So he wrote a book. It's called Heart 411. And the goal was to get good information into the hands of patients. You know, like this is what we do know. This is what we don't quite know,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is why I would prefer to try to do a particular procedure, right? So as we get older, one of the challenges is, you know, that heart muscle has been pumping a long time and the valves inside mm-hmm. of it start to kind of have problems, you know, things wear out and, mm-hmm. you know, they have to decide, well, what would be an appropriate thing to assist your heart muscle. And so he built that book, found that that was helpful to kind of enhance the relationship with the patients and also mm-hmm. kind of improve that relationship. that you have to establish with a patient. And they have used Epic a long time, and the materials that are linked there are okay, you know, but overall, it doesn't seem like it's helpful, right? If you just print a whole bunch of stuff or just say, here, go read this, the patients aren't really going to engage. And many times it'll be written in a format or a fashion that is not really digestible, right? So it may be perfectly fine if you were going to operate on another surgeon. You could just give them all the Latin and, you know,
right.
But we got people that barely speak English, and you're going to hand them that and expect that they're going to somehow be less fearful when you're going into surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the company that I've been working with, they pulled an early version of a large language model. Most people know what ChatGPT is today, but actually they licensed something from Carnegie Mellon, which is the same thing, and have tuned it to deal with, say, the medical world. So one of the common challenges they have is intent, right? And they will create these libraries in there. And so you and I, we can have a conversation. If I say the word drug, it's pretty obvious what we're talking about, right? Like, humans have a great way of sort of understanding intent, knowing what we're doing in a conversation, and if we use a particular word, what that word is related to. Computers, not so much. And they built a set of videos and things so that you could type a question, like we now understand, like when you do a chat bot, you don't have to try to do a keyword thing, like when you're trying to search in Google. You can kind of use human parlance and it'll figure it out and give you a reasonable response. And so if you marry something like that with a content repository of videos, you can make this information easier for people to kind of ask a question, get a intelligent response, and then we can monitor that and see what is the most frequent question, what's essentially the question that they keep asking, and then look at the response video and say, maybe this video needs to add a couple things to it, right? And so they've built this repository, and about 5 years ago, Cleveland Clinic did a competition because they were concerned about, you know, how do we improve this educational process for patients? And the company I do this work for, they won the competition. And the start of it was, okay, for one doctor, we're going to have the nurse basically enter a bunch of information into a website, hit save, send an email, say, you know, the information you're looking for is here, click the link, go through stuff. And it really helped. They saw a dramatic improvement in engagement. And what they maybe didn't fully realize was, if you give people information and allow them to kind of process it, you can start to kick in some of that placebo effect and that mental process that is really important to healthcare, which is, I got to believe that this is going to work, right? If that mental thing kicks in, you know, your outcomes go to the moon, right? That's why the placebo effect has to overcome a 60% barrier, right? Like, if I just gave you a sugar pill and told you it was magic, mentally you will make that a reality, right? And so mental components of healing are enormous. And they were able to kind of elicit this by giving that information out there so people have videos. It's in regular English, you know, like something that you could actually digest, have some diagrams that kind of go through the process. and, oh, I have a question, type. Here's an intelligent answer for you. And it's not generated content, right? So it's not as crazy. We don't have to deal with a hallucination problem in AI, because it's just trying to effectively index the existing content to make that easier.
So this was basically static information, curated static information, right?
Yeah, but it obviously has to be tuned over time. So as we've been
doing
things in HART, there's some interesting things that we see. We have to sort of enhance a very common question that there is a response to, but we're looking at cleaning up the video, is how will this procedure impact my sleep, right? Like, there's quite a few things that kind of come up from that. And so we have to look at, okay, well, is that a three-part response? You know, is it a one-part response? You know, how are we going to break this down so that we can help people understand, well, yeah, one, you're going to be in pain. Two, you know, it will impact sleep.
Yeah.
But if you get this information together, and then that patient can, it's never really a one-to-one thing, right? If I'm having surgery, my family's having surgery, right? So my wife has questions she wants to know the answer to. My kids, you know, they're younger, but they may have some questions. They want some answers. And if you sort of put that all together, it helps the entire family unit feel more confident about, this is the right thing to do. I understand why it's going to help. One of the more common things that they actually ask is like, where do I park? You know, it is super important that people make that really digestible, because you're just amplifying the anxiety.
I always, that's one of my first questions wherever I go, because I drive a pickup truck and I want to know that there's a parking space that's got the right height so that I can pull in without, hitting the roof.
Exactly.
Simple, things you don't, wait a minute.
But if you couldn't park, or you had to walk a great distance, you got a heart condition already, and now you got to park 2 miles away, and then you're maybe late showing up, what are the odds that this is going to work well, right? You've already put the patient at a disadvantage, right?
Yeah.
So
that's very interesting.
So they're seeing 30% improvement in a number of factors that are really positive. Number one, patient satisfaction to the moon, right? Patients just because they were able to do a control group, this patient, this, and they would use it, and then they would and they measured it, and the satisfaction is really high. And then all the readmits, the complications, almost another 30% swing down, because if you give people what they need to know, and it's available after surgery, right? So I don't remember, let me go double check this. They will actually know, oh yeah, that's infected. What do I do? When do I stop my drugs? When do I restart my drugs? A whole range of things. What should I eat? What shouldn't I eat? Can I have water? And we've been putting, that burden on the physicians, right? Because the brunt of those questions always hit them or the staff. And it's sort of known cost in healthcare that we have to do this educational process. And interestingly enough, they're able to get maybe 2 to 3 extra surgeries a week for every physician who brings a system in, because they don't have to spend that.
Really?
Time. Yes.
Really? I didn't know that. That is really interesting. That's a huge benefit there.
Yes. Wow. It's kind of akin back to my earlier thing. You build something, you're trying to solve a particular problem. You kind of know the genesis of, all right, let's just make this information easier to access. simpler to understand, help build a little bit of rapport between patient and provider, and then some of these other things just start happening. And you kind of can look back and say, huh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that that necessarily was there. But when you sort of consider your audience, what is going to help them, and then, you know, start to give them some tools that aren't necessarily like way out in front of them. If we, you might be able to start with a chatbot thing now, right? But still, a lot of people in our target demo aren't necessarily interested in typing. So,
Absolutely. You know, Matt, we're kind of getting a little bit. I'm just looking at the time that we've got here.
Go ahead.
I'm fascinated by the results that, you know, the system was able to provide, right, or to enable. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, any integration points? You know, kind of what's it like maintaining a system like that based on your experience in this particular case study?
Yeah. So the original process was nurse goes to the website, type, save, send.
Right.
So that they knew early on, that's no bueno, but you kind of had to start somewhere. And we had to come up with ways to bring that into the actual Epic, right? Like into the process that a clinician...
Into the EMR, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what we ended up doing is now that ONC kind of requires patients to have access to their data, right? Like information blocking is, it's illegal.
Right.
Know, it's as bad to block it as it is to breach it. So... You have now some interesting tools with the FHIR APIs, so you don't necessarily have to try to create an HL7 gateway to make all that stuff work and deal with some of the challenges that occur with these batch-based approaches. And
That's like hand-to-hand combat for data.
Well, there's some interesting caveats in how FHIR actually gets implemented, because Epic and Cerner, they never were really thrilled that the federal government says, you know, the data that's in the system is free. The patients have to have access to this. If they want to have it in Jello, you got to give it to them. You know, like that is now their burden. They weren't thrilled. And the way they implement FHIR can show some interesting challenges. Let's say that you would read the spec on what the API is supposed to do, and then you get the data back and you say, where's the data? And invariably the vendor is blocking some of the data, right? So originally we were going to basically tag an order to the surgical order, right? So schedule you for something, ta-da, we can already look up what's a CBT and when is it and who is it, other stuff. And then that order normally lands in my chart anyways, and, you know, use the FHIR, go get the data. Epic blocks some of the CBT codes. So you get one. That's not enough. And there's a Sherlock that's been issued, which is just a way to get a change out of Epic. And we're hopeful that they're going to kind of correct that. But as of, you know, 2024, if you implement the latest version of Epic and whatever, you can't do it by scheduling a surgery. It won't work. So we have a order that we build, and it allows at that point in time to define, you know, what is the education that we would like. and that order can then drop into my chart. And then basically the magic of automation starts to kick in. So a patient clicks link so that you've kept them within an environment that they know. And then we spend a lot of time kind of, what is this message? How will they access it? How, you know, explain how they can bookmark it so it doesn't get lost in the feed of all the messages. And then, you know, now there's a link, there's a button, you know, press me. And when they press it, then there's all of the security that starts kicking in. You know, we have to do the OAuth and we have to, you know, go through a lot of hoops to prove that we're a valid connection point. You know, all that has to happen immediately. And then through that, we can pull out some of that key information. And one thing that we didn't realize was as they were expanding, you know, they started with a particular process. So you couldn't, to make it easier, you know, in general, physicians don't want to click stuff. So they had to boil down like all those CPTs to effectively phrases, right? So mitral valve, aortic valve. Certain, you know, like, what are we going to work on?
And, right.
When they built the order, the original one, then they started to add stuff. And if they didn't quite follow a protocol for that, well, who knew? Like that became important. So, you know, I would get a phone call. We launch, you know, there's hundreds of patients and now gone through the program. They're starting to monitor it. They've got, you know, 50 physicians or surgeons that are using the thing. You start adding more stuff to it. And then, you guys didn't follow a particular process. So, you know, they want to amend that order. And, you know, the thing, message comes over. And then the API, we can't figure out, like, what are we supposed to send them? Like, you know, we'll load kind of a default, and then the patients start to call the help desk. And like, I don't have, you know, videos for this particular process. What's going on? You know, so then we had to, like, delve in, who's the patient, what's going on? And then, again, it became this kind of root issue thing of, like, oh, when they create or if they go to modify this particular order, you need to follow a particular process of, like, how do you spell something or put a comma in it or things like that.
Right.
In order to allow this thing to come through, because we still need some level of a standard in order to kind of be on the same page, you know, and that I know a lot of people understand when you're dealing with HL7 or system integration in general.
And as you mentioned before, right, you're going in with a particular challenge in mind and you're uncovering others as you go along the way. You know, you're implementing 1.0 and then, you know, people have a way of figuring out ways around of or not including or doing something a little different, unexpected. And then you're faced with, you know, okay, you know, here's another challenge we did not expect. But, you know, it sounds like, Matt, you know, what you've been able to accomplish has been a well thought out or thoughtful approach to making sure that you've got, you know, process around your approach and that it is measured and, you know, responsible, and you're the results, I guess, speak for themselves. You know, it's a positive relationship, you know, and it's a continuous improvement, right? As you continue to work through, even in this case, you know, the curation or the improvement of the videos themselves, right? And how to maintain that's impressive.
Yeah, and we're doing more, right? So they want to go to more, say, like ambulatory processes and help spell some of that out. And we know more about some important things to explain, or, you know, so if you're creating a package, right, so they want to go to a new center, take pictures of the outside, you know, take pictures of the inside.
Don't forget the parking lot.
Exactly. Like, help people really experience this thing, because if you set their day off wrong,
it's all downhill from there.
Yeah, like, you know, and look, everybody in healthcare, the most compassionate people you will ever know. And
absolutely,
we're going to help the person out, even if they had something else go wrong on their day. Like, this isn't really going to be a challenge for people, but don't add to anybody's burden unnecessarily.
And yep. Understood.
I think a lot of the positive things will come from that.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, we're kind of at the edge of the time here. So unfortunately, I'm going to have to wrap up, but this was really enjoyable. So I want to thank you. Really, this has been, I've learned quite a bit. So I'm really appreciative of your time today. This really wraps up our discussion for today. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Stay tuned for more episodes in this podcast series. And by all means, check out our other podcasts on your favorite podcast platform. We are New Jersey Hymns, that's NJHIMSS on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Podbean, TuneIn, plus Alexa. Please subscribe to our channel on those platforms, and please hit those like buttons, and please subscribe. And you can also find our podcast on our website, njhims.org. That's njhims.org. Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate it. And thanks to all of our listeners.
Thanks, Mike.